This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. I am delighted to have Kelly Fedoruk on the program with us this week. Kelly is litigation staff counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom, or ADF, at its Washington, D.C. Regional Service Center, where she is an invaluable member of ADF's Center for Marriage and Family. Kelly has appeared in numerous media outlets, including Fox News, NPR, and BBC. Kelly is the author of the feature article in the spring 2015 issue of the North Carolina Family Policy Council quarterly magazine, Family North Carolina. And we're going to be talking with Kelly today about some of the important issues she raises in her excellent article, which is entitled Religious Liberty Under Fire, Why North Carolina Can't Wait to Protect Free Speech and Free Exercise. Kelly, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, John, for having me on. It's great to be here.
Well, we're so grateful for you and for all your great work and all the time and attention that you've given to North Carolina in recent weeks working on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act here in the state. Now, Kelly, in your article, you begin with a number of examples from states across the nation, including North Carolina, where religious liberty has been under attack. Give us, if you would, maybe the top three examples from your article that really highlight the increasing attacks on religious liberty of people of faith.
Sure. Well, one specific area that we've seen a growing conflict between the government and religious freedom is on school campuses, where students are threatened in terms of their ability to live and to think freely. And one from North Carolina, where a school administration told a young girl that she could not wear a pro-life t-shirt to school. She was just quietly handing out flyers to interested students during non-instructional time as part of her participation in the Pro-Life Day of Silent Solidarity. But the principal there confiscated the flyers and told her she had to cover up her shirt and her freedom to express her beliefs about the dignity and sanctity of life was impeded and was infringed in that particular example. We're also seeing growing threats to those who believe and seek to live according to their belief that marriage is something sacred, that the children deserve a mom and dad, and that there's something very unique and special about the marital relationship. And another example comes from Washington State, where a 70-year-old florist, Baronelle Stutzman, currently finds herself and her 40-year career as a floral artist endangered simply because she referred a longtime friend and customer to another florist for floral design because she could not participate and support his same-sex wedding. And the Washington State Attorney General has now turned that decision into a cause to celebrate and publicly denounced her and is now suing her in her both her personal and professional capacity. So she stands to lose everything she owns, her savings and her home, simply because her belief about marriage happens to differ from that which the government is trying to support. So these are real threats that we're starting to see more and more arise as government ideology conflicts with every citizen's freedom to live and to work according to their beliefs.
Well, there's no doubt that we're seeing an increase in hostility toward religious expression in America today across the country. I think it'll be interesting for our listeners to go back and review a little bit the history of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was a federal law that was passed in 1993. And this has really been the basis for states, as we've seen growing hostilities toward religious expression, enacting federal RFRA-like legislation, but on the state level. Tell us, Kelly, a little bit about the history of the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, what its purpose is, and what it does today.
Well, up till 1990, courts had protected religious freedom with the highest level of review that a court can rely upon, because when the government seeks to threaten or undermine fundamental freedoms, such as religious freedom, courts had to weigh and make the government prove by the highest level that that was a necessary action to take. But in 1990, the U.S. Supreme Court substantially weakened those constitutional protections for religious freedom and subsequently, Congress decided to act to correct that weakening by passing the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, as you said, in 1993. And so since then, multiple states, now 21 states, have followed suit to ensure that when the government tries to force you to violate your conscience, violate your beliefs, you have an ability to get into court and ensure that the government only violates your belief if it has a really, really good reason for doing so.
And Kelly, as you point out in your article, the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act has guided some important religious freedom rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court, including the somewhat recent decision in the Hobby Lobby Conestoga Wood case. Tell us about that case briefly, and more importantly, how did the federal RFRA influence the Supreme Court's ruling?
Well, the Hobby Lobby and Conestoga case involved two family businesses that had sincerely held beliefs about the dignity of life and did not and could not comply with the government mandate that they provide and pay for abortion-inducing drugs in their employees' health plans. And so the Hans, which is the family behind the Conestoga case, they're a Mennonite family. They build cabinets across the country, and they are peace-loving people. But when the government decided to try to threaten their very beliefs about the sacredness and dignity of every human life, they filed a lawsuit in federal court and were able to rely on federal RFRA as their defense, and ultimately won when the Supreme Court said, you know, the government cannot come in and force you to do this. There's other means available for the government to achieve its alleged interests in free abortion-inducing drugs that does not necessitate requiring family-owned businesses to violate the very tenets of their beliefs and that which guides their lives. So it was a true victory for both Conestoga and Hobby Lobby to know that they would be protected under this law. And thankfully, the U.S. Supreme Court found for these family-owned businesses that they can and should be able to live without government coercion.
Well, absolutely. Now, clearly, the federal RFRA does have certain limitations when it comes to its application to the states, which is why several states, 21 as you've mentioned, have also enacted their own state-level RFRA laws. Tell us about that and why it's important for states to enact these laws on the state level to help protect religious freedom of citizens within the individual states.
Absolutely, because when Congress passed federal RFRA, it originally applied to the states, but then subsequently the U.S. Supreme Court said that it could only apply to federal government action seeking to force individuals or family-owned businesses, as the court made clear this past summer in Conestoga, that the government couldn't force them to violate their conscience. But when that decision came down, state and local government could still force citizens at the state level to violate their conscience. So folks in the states were vulnerable. And so now 21 states have adopted this law, this higher level of review, to ensure that citizens, if the government tries to come in and force you to violate your conscience, you get a day in court. You get to have that fair hearing where you can defend yourself and argue that, look, the government's trying to come in and violate the very tenets of what I believe. And, you know, RFRA, over the past 20 years, we've seen it benefit those in the Native American community whose religious beliefs require them to have longer hair. So children in public schools in Texas, the little boys have been able to have slightly longer hair in public school just because that's consistent with their religious beliefs. We've seen RFRA just recently benefit one of our clients in the state of Kentucky, a printer who was against his conscience to print certain messages on his T-shirts, and when asked to print a message that advanced same-sex relationships, he relied on RFRA to defend himself. And recently the court said that, yes, he does indeed has the freedom to print and to speak and to promote those messages that are consistent with his conscience. So RFRA helps a lot of different people with a lot of different belief backgrounds to stay true to that which is important to them, that which guides their lives, and free from the government picking and choosing which beliefs are permitted and which ones are not.
Well, that's a very helpful explanation. North Carolina does not presently have a Religious Freedom Restoration Act law in place. Bills have been introduced in both the State House and the State Senate that would enact a RFRA in North Carolina, but those bills have yet to see action in the General Assembly, although they have been the subject of a good bit of debate and attention. And you and others with Alliance Defending Freedom have been providing a wealth of incredibly valuable information and insight and sharing that information with our state lawmakers to help them understand exactly what RFRA is, exactly what it does, and exactly what it does not do. And as we've heard from opponents of RFRA here in North Carolina, some have argued that religious liberty is already addressed in the state constitution, and because of that, that a state-level RFRA bill or a statute is not necessary. Why do you believe this is not the case?
Well, there are unclear protections currently in North Carolina for religious freedom, and citizens in North Carolina are very vulnerable right now. North Carolina is only one of two states in the entire Southeast that has not adopted this important law. And there's a lot of misinformation out there. And while North Carolina's constitution is very strong and very well worded, unfortunately, because of the U.S. Supreme Court decision from 1990 that has left it unclear whether North Carolina courts will still provide that strong protection. So that's why the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is needed in North Carolina to essentially give legal teeth to the Constitution you have, to ensure that those constitutional protections that are guaranteed to North Carolinians, to make sure that the courts actually properly examine burdens on those freedoms. So if you look at the court cases specific to North Carolina, only revealed a very strong cloud of uncertainty as to how the courts will examine government burdens on religious freedom.
Clearly, one of the more popular arguments that we've heard from opponents of RFRA is that, and we heard this in other states like Indiana and Arizona, is that these Religious Freedom Restoration Acts would actually legalize discrimination and allow business owners to refuse service to customers at will. Is this true?
No, not in the least. It's really unfortunate that people are asserting things that are so egregiously false. The law doesn't allow anyone to harm any person or any group. The law is meant to protect every citizen regardless of political affiliation, orientation, religious background, or beliefs. In fact, it really prevents the government from harming citizens without proving in court that harming them or burdening them was necessary. So this law really does protect every person's freedom from government intrusion. It's not a trump card. It's simply a balancing test that says, look, if the government tries to overreach in an unreasonable fashion and try to force you to live in a way that's inconsistent with your beliefs, and it doesn't have a really, really good reason for doing so, like security or public safety or something like that, then the government shouldn't be able to do that. So it really allows the courts to weigh important government interests with the freedom of every single citizen.
Well, it has been very frustrating to see the mischaracterizations and the misinformation that has been put out in other states, and we've seen the same thing in North Carolina by opponents. So we are going to continue to encourage citizens across the state, our legislative leaders, our governor, to really, as you said, take a hard and fast look at this legislation and hopefully prevail upon them to do a very necessary thing and enact Religious Freedom Restoration Act in North Carolina. But Kelly, we're unfortunately nearly out of time for this week. I want to thank you so much for all of your hard work on this critically important issue and for contributing the feature article for the current edition of Family North Carolina Magazine. Kelly Fedorik, thank you again so much for your time and for all that you and Alliance Defending Freedom do to protect religious liberty across our nation.
Thank you, John, so much.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.